This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I'm here with a panel of experts to talk about the latest release or the Pentagon's admission that there was actual footage that they was in their possession that was taken of a UFO. So Nick Pope, Jan Herzon, Grant Cameron, and Dr. J.J. Hertog are real leading experts. But let's start with you, Nick, about what you have to say about this new disclosure from the Pentagon.
Well, it's fascinating because, of course, these three videos of U.S. Navy jets chasing UFOs have been in the public domain for 2.5 years now. And the Department of Defense was under no pressure and no obligation to make a statement about this. And yet on April 27th, they did so. And they said, we are putting this statement out to clear up any misunderstanding about these videos and their provenance. But of course, you know, that's not what's happened at all. It hasn't cleared up any misunderstanding. If anything, it's led to further questions. Why is it, and this is not the first time, by the way, that the US government, every time the story of these Navy UFO encounters and the associated story of the Pentagon's ATIP program, every time that story looks as if it's dying down, the government itself throws gasoline on the fire and keeps it going. So the real question here, I think, is not so much, though we can get into this, I'm sure, what's in the videos and what's going on, but why is it that the US government is driving the story? Their use of the word unauthorized to describe the previous release is interesting. I think it's a shot across the bows. And I think it's part of a process whereby they are saying, look, we are not going to be reacting and following the narrative of the New York Times, the To the Stars Academy, whoever it is. We are going to be front and center. And if anyone is going to be driving the narrative on UFOs and associated issues, it's us.
Okay, let me, before I go further, I have Grant Cameron, Canadian investigator, Jan Herzon, the director of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, and Dr. JJ and Desiree Hertog, futurists and real investigators on the subject. I am gonna show what Nick is talking about, which was the New York Times, December 16th, 2017, headline that people weren't sure was where they came from. Of course, it says, if you see there on the screen, US Defense Department release. This is, Grant, you just want to tell people what we're going to see here in this New York Times video.
Yeah, this is the Nimitz. This is the chase where they have the object sits there for a week and then they go to chase it and they pick it up and they capture it on film.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA.
Oh my gosh. So going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. Oh, thank you. That's not LNS though, is it? It's not. I don't understand. Well, if there's another thing, it's rotating.
That is what the Pentagon has just said. Yes, that is one of our videos. So, Jan, do you want to jump in on what really just happened with the Pentagon's acknowledgement?
Well, personally, what I believe is that they're trying to correct an error because there was a person within our community who was challenging the Pentagon to come clean with whether Lou Elizondo was real or not, and got some bad information that the TTSA and Lou Elizondo were not who they said they were. Then there was a Popular Science article by another gentleman who crawled through and came up with all the documentation, which basically threw it back in the face, in my opinion, of the Pentagon, that they didn't have their information correct. So I'm sure someone up at the top said, straighten this out and get the right information out. Now, what I've been told about the videos back from the very beginning was they were never classified. That's why they were able to be released. They were marked highly sensitive, which is a different classification than a classified document. And so Lou Elizondo was able to take it through a different process, a backdoor process, if you will, for highly classified things, and got these things released. And of course, when they hit the press back in December 16th of 2017, I am sure it was a shock to most of the people in the Pentagon that these were even out in the public. That's the narrative I've been told. That's the narrative that I personally believe. I don't work for the Pentagon. I don't know everything that goes on in the hallowed halls of our military establishment. But I think this was basically an attempt to correct some misinformation that had been put out officially by the Pentagon, which was wrong. And that's but what I see.
How could it say under the New York Times article, U.S. Department of Defense? It actually says that. It still does on the New York Times. Is there anything?
You're talking about back in 2017, or are you talking about the one that came
out? I talk about 2017. It says U.S. Department of Defense right there in the article. So obviously the New York Times must have checked it out with the Department of Defense in order to give them the credit, right? Or are we missing something?
This was the article by Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Keene. I'm not privy to all the investigation that they did prior to releasing the article, but they obviously coordinated with a bunch of different people, including TTSA, Chris Mellon, Lou Elizondo, and I'm sure people within the Pentagon to put that article out originally. But I mean, the Pentagon's like, you know, I worked for IBM for 37 years, 400,000 employees. You know, the one employee here doesn't know what the employee over there is doing. I'm sure it's the same way at the Pentagon. The person over here doesn't know what the person over there is doing. And what I come to learn the more and more I'm in this field is that we have very siloed things going on across the gamut. Which is why this person here, I mean, I had people in the intelligence community come to me and say, I'm shocked that this program ATIP existed because I should have known about it. Well, you don't know about it because you weren't read into the program. So, I mean, Nick could talk to this better than I could. And I'm sure Grant, these classified programs, they're quite interesting to me. I'd love to know what's going on. I guess the better question I would ask is, when are we going to see the fourth, fifth, and sixth video?
Well, before we get to that, let me just get JJ and Desiree Hertog to jump in there and say, what do you think is really happening, not just with the release, but the acknowledgement? I mean, Nick touched on this, but in your opinion, because you've been investigating this field.
We've looked at this for 48 years. I think there's going to be an avalanche of new material being released. I worked in foreign countries. I label it as a field researcher to bring back documents like I'm showing here from the Brazilian government of 14 unidentified spacecraft over a nuclear facility in Brazil. This was unknown even to the public at that time, but essentially most of the information goes into a hamper and it's lost forever. But now we see a breath of fresh air, so to speak, coming from the Pentagon. They recognize something's happening with other government programs in disclosure. So I think they're trying to logically prepare the American public for a bigger story.
Right. It's interesting they did it right during the coronavirus. I mean, they could have waited a few more weeks and then it would have been viral. And that's why it's so important we do what we're doing today to tell people, yes, that the Pentagon has confirmed that film footage. And I think that's important because even though, yeah, it's valid, it said Department of Defense underneath it, but now there's really no denying it. Nobody out there can deny it. Even with these young kids flying in the airplanes, the Hornets said, you know, that there's a whole fleet of them, which is an amazing thing, that they didn't just see one little thing going by. And you look at it, you didn't show the whole film footage. We encourage everyone to go out there and look at the whole thing. But there, you see the water, because they're kind of close to the water, and you see the guy trying to lock on. So two of them, or maybe it's the same one, goes by, and then he finally locks onto it. So these things are going fast. They're going amazing how they're turning and twisting. It's not ours. And that's the big question. Everyone says, oh, it's probably the U.S. government's. But then Pentagon saying it's unidentified, which means it's not ours.
Well, let me talk to Grant, because he's been following the whole government cover-up. He has a whole thing called UFO presidential.com, I think it's what it's called, where he follows each president's ideas and facts that have been presented during those administrations about UFOs. So Grant, you see them coming forward and taking things back. What is your analysis of this situation?
Well, I see, and to make a statement, I wrote about this before the New York Times article. I put out Managing Magic, which was almost a year before. I identified Jim Semivan. I said they were going to drop this thing. I said that Podesta and Obama and Hillary Clinton were behind this. It was all spelled out. So I was being told this was going to be dropping. So it was no surprise to me. I say they've been doing this since 1947 when they gave two 8x11 photographs, gun camera footage, photographs to Kenneth Arnold from the Fourth Air Force and told him this is UFOs. And it goes into the 1950s when Disney was given the job to do a UFO documentary. Bob Emmenegger was given a documentary in the 1970s. And he told me that the Holloman Air Force Base film was declassified, was not classified as well. And then you have Bill Moore come along and he's got these 24 people and he's leaking material. And so I say it's like wash, rinse, and repeat. They just keep doing the same thing again. They put stuff out, they pull it back. Like when the New York Times article came out, you got to remember that there was two different names. So the Washington Post went the same day as the New York Times, and they had a different name for the program than the New York Times. So they're using sources inside the Pentagon. And when we mention the government, you always have to keep in mind, because I know most of the people that were in this thing. I've known about them. I first wrote about the Avery in 1989, and all the names of these guys, and it's the same guys. And when you're talking about the government, you're not talking about one entity. For example, right now, you have two official stories inside the United States of America about where the virus comes from. And so it really doesn't matter. A couple of years ago, the White House made an official statement from the Office of the Science Advisor that there were no UFOs. There was no UFO program. And so they put it out, they pull it back, and that's what they want, is this plausible deniability. The question was brought up, why would they bring it out in the middle of the virus? That's part of the pattern. That's when they dropped the New York Times article was on December 16th. They drop it just before all the reporters go on holidays for Christmas, the same as when they shut down Blue Book. They just shut it down on December the 17th when there's no reporters around and it's not going to go viral. It's the idea is you put it out, but you don't want, because if you want the story out, you can stand the president, you can stand the CIA director up and tell them they don't want it out. They sort of want it out. They want people just to have this sort of thing where nobody really knows what's going on, where the story's getting out, and you have plausible deniability. Because if everybody knows that the president is running the show, that he's covering this thing up, it's all over. They want people to think that there's some sort of thing inside the government. And my work with people inside the government, because I knew of a lot of these people, like Semi Van and dealt with Hal Putoff and Kit Green and all these guys over the years. And I know that there's people inside the government who want the material out. So I don't see the government putting this out. I see a group inside the government who is pushing an agenda, like John Podesta is pushing an agenda. And so this would be somebody inside the government, because a lot of people, when you start looking at the presidential records, you don't see evil guys who are trying to distract the people. You see people who are doing the best they can with the job they've got. And somebody inside the government wants the truth told at one specific point. So it's not the government, it's people inside the government.
Let me talk to a guy who was inside the government, not our government, but the British Ministry of Defense. I also want to comment before I talk to Nick. December 17th, the Blue Book was closed, 1989. December 17th, that was the day that story was released to the public. So I'm just interested in that. But Nick, I want to talk to you about inside the government. What is their strategy for releasing, I mean, from your experience, releasing information, taking it back, putting it out there? I mean, what goes on for inside that organization, that control?
Well, the first point, speaking about the British government, is that we have already declassified and released around about 60,000 pages of UFO-related documents, most of which have been put out without any redactions, not all, but most, released to the National Archives in the UK. And I came out of retirement to help with that. I did some spokesperson work, I did some media interviews, and we saw it as a good opportunity to showcase our commitment to open government and freedom of information. And some of the UFO-related documents that were released were highly classified at the time. So, for example, the intelligence assessment of the phenomenon, colloquially known as Project Condyne, but formerly titled United Air Unidentified Aerial Phenomena in the UK Air Defence Region. And recently, of course, the US government has confirmed that, as they put it, they borrowed the term UAP from us Brits. But there's a lot of material. If people go through some of the material in Project Condyne's final report, there's a real read across into some of the ATIP documentation, particularly in relation to technology acquisition. the sorts of things that are better understanding of the UFO phenomenon, whatever we think its true nature is, could tell us, and what the spin-offs might be in terms of what we in the Ministry of Defense termed, quote, novel military applications, unquote. And the report referenced what Russia and China was doing into all that as well. So our the basic position is this. I think governments all around the world are declassifying and releasing where they can. And clearly what we see with these three videos and with some of the ATIP documentation is it's not a single event. It's a process. And we have taken some interesting steps. And there are some further interesting steps to come. I mean, I think one of you, I can't remember who it was, somebody said, well, what about the other videos? Absolutely. I don't think anyone's kidding ourselves that there have only been three incidents where US military aircraft have encountered and filmed UFOs. I mean, nonsense. If you look at what the Navy themselves said when they released guidance to pilots about what to do if they encounter these things, they haven't released the specific guidance, of course, but they've confirmed it has been issued. And they said, we're doing this in response to what they termed as an ongoing series of incursions into restricted military airspace. So if you'll forgive the pun, this is not a tip of the iceberg. It's the tip of the iceberg.
Right. So thank you, Nick. So, Jan, you're the head of a national organization that's really focused on this, MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and you've been following this personally. You've had your own sightings. What do you think the government's trying to do to kind of manipulate our minds or condition us or somehow open us up? Where do you think that's headed?
Well, you know, Lou spoke at our 2018 symposium, and he said something that really resonated with me. He said that it's not the purpose of government to satisfy the idle curiosity of its citizens. It's the purpose of government to protect its citizens. So I think, you know, we've built a military with the purpose of protecting us. We've built an intelligence community for the purposes of hopefully keeping us safe. It's really going to take the people to come forward and push this forward. So, you know, and I know Grant may have other opinions and Nick may have other opinions, but I see that we owe a debt of gratitude, frankly, in my opinion, to the guys, likenesses of Chris Mellon and Lou Elizondo, who are brave enough to step forward, because I tell you, there's no fame and fortune in talking about this subject to the general public. You get faced with derision, even today, despite the announcements that have been made, despite the press that has been given to this subject. The average citizen, at least 50% of them, still don't believe anything has ever visited this planet. I mean, I talk to large groups. I ask that question right up front. How many people believe there's life somewhere far, far away in the universe, at least as intelligent as us? 100% of the hands go up. But when I ask the second question, which is, how many people believe at some time in the distant past, ancient times, or now, that life has ever visited Earth? I only get half of the hands to go up. So we still have half of the people on this planet who don't think there's anything to this. And we know the fact there is.
But I have to say, we've been lied to. If the government would have come out with the truth, there'd be 100% of those hands going up. So the fact that, yes, some of these people are heroes to come out, but great, but we are left still with lies and cover-ups and not the real history of us as a planetary civilization. So Dr. Hertog and Desiree, you want to talk to that for a second?
Well, can I just say one thing?
I'll go first.
Go ahead, Jan.
I just want to say something before you go to Hertog. You know, the intelligence community has spent 60 years basically debasing this whole question of UFOs, right? I mean, intelligence operations, making people look foolish, making people die if they don't follow the right. I mean, we've seen 60 years of this happening. And so every time the public gets something credible, they're told by very important people, you know, whoever that might be, scientists, that there's no way this could possibly be true. So we've conditioned our population that this isn't real for 60 years. It's not going to flip overnight. I mean, there's a reason why they're calling it UAP. It's because they've so poisoned the UFO field that if you say the word UFO, they think you're a nut. You can't go to Capitol Hill and talk to senators about UFOs. You can go to Capitol Hill and talk to them about UAPs. Well, I got news for you. UAP equals UFO. Anyway, right. I'll leave it there.
It's a rebranding. It's a total rebranding. I think it's probably good marketing. So, JJ, what were you saying?
I was going to say, Nick mentioned there's more film footage. And, of course, this event, the Nimitz event that we saw the film footage of, took place in 2004. But they've also mentioned that there was a whole month, and this was a whole week, actually, that those events that we were talking about, the Nimitz, took place November 10th and November 16th. The 14th was where the film footage, I think, was shot from. But in 2014, off the coast of the Atlantic coast of the U.S., there was also several months of these young kids flying these planes, seeing these unusual objects, and they were reported as well. We don't have the film footage of that. So people really need to listen to programs like this, get on with what's happening. And it's interesting, I find that they're always going into the most recent stuff, we'll say 2014, 2014. They're not going back to the past, because I think it would be too much to uncover the majority of data that they actually have going back to the 1940s. So I'm happy if they just start doing, this century, that's fine. And there's a lot to come out with.
There's definitely a psychological and sociological backdrop to much of this that's being quote-unquote declassified. And I go back many years ago when I knew one of the admirals at a very high level, Admiral Dolfardi, who explained that there's just a whole area that cannot be released at that time. This is back in the 1950s. So to put it in a practical way, we need to orientate the public with a psychological and the sociological preparation. I do not think this is being adequately addressed, as Jan just said. There's too many, shall we say, put downs. So realistically speaking, great engineers, even astronauts, have been somewhat reluctant to tell their story before camera.
But I have to say, it's very important to realize that, they've been here for a long time. They haven't really harmed us. The military does know about it. People have individuals, what MUFON does, reports on all the reports that have gone on. Jan, how many reports have you guys reported on? I mean, all the people that have seen this all over the world.
Well over 100,000. We're getting 500 to 1,000 reports a month. Now, I have to be honest, probably 90% of those, when you really crawl into them, we could put on the side. I mean, we're getting Starlink reports, we're getting Venus reports, but there is that 5 to 10% that is really what I would say potentially positively not from here.
Well, Grant, I want to ask you what you think is going on as far as the government strategy. And do you feel this has been a real breakthrough, or is it the same old thing?
Well, I call it Bill Moore on steroids. I mean, they're much more effective this time than they were before. You got to remember that the Nimitz film was rolled out in 2007. And according to Eric Davis, it was the guy that picked up the radar data on the Nimitz, and they leaked it to that German production company, and it didn't spin. So they've done it again. And as I go back even to Bob Emmenegger in the 1973, when he was given the Holloman Air Force film, he had it in his possession. He was told about this channeling of the alien at the CIA. He was given a bunch of material. He put out the documentary. And when I asked him, I said, did you had to give the film back? And then they put in 8 seconds of the film in the actual documentary. I said, was there any other films? Did you give all the other films back? And he said, no, we had the one from the launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base. I said, you got the film? He said, yeah, I think Alan's got it. And I know that James Fox negotiated to try to put that film. That was a film that was given to them. They said they could have any film they wanted. So people are thinking this is something new. It's like, wow, they did this. To me, it's like it's the same story. In fact, Bob Emmenegger tells a story that he did the documentary in the 1970s. And in 1983, he's contacted by Paul Schartl, the security manager at Norton Air Force Base, where they keep all the film for all the military. And he says, the government liked what you did in the 1970s. We'd like you to do it again. And he said, again? What do you mean? Who's this? Is this Reagan behind this? And he said, he wouldn't answer the question. He got pulled in there, and they bring in Jacques Vallée's written about this. J. Allen Hynek was brought in, and a guy by the name of General Glenn E. Miller was in there with Paul Schartl, and he said to Schartl, he said, I want you to pull all the UFO film for Hynek. Pull all the film. And he said, sorry, General, I can't do that. You need a requisition. He said, God damn, I'll have your ass. You pull the film for Hynek. You're going to show him the UFO film. So you got to remember, this is not the first rodeo for these guys. And they've done it. They're very effective. I will give them credit because I wrote about it before they did it. I was being told I had an inside source. I knew what was going on. And it was very, very effective what they've done, how they got the New York Times, the Politico, and Washington Post, who had never done an article. And that was the whole deal, is once you get the New York Times to do the story, suddenly it's like, oh, the New York Times is talking about it. It must be for real. But you got to remember that three newspapers went on that day, not just the New York Times. Therefore, this is a coordinated effort. And it was done highly effective. And they have moved the ball down the field. Because I remember I wrote an article called The 64 Reasons the Government Has Decided Not to Tell the Truth. And I remember Stephen Greer was saying, oh, the stock market will melt down. The religious people will all go nuts. And then New York Times comes and says, yeah, they got a UFO program. It was for real. What happened? Absolutely nothing. Everyone, I knew that already. Yeah, no problem. I knew that already. And they've acclimatized the people. And that was the NASA document from the 1960s that said, if you realize there was extraterrestrial life, you have to acclimatize the people before you go public. That's an old document.
Right. JJ, you had a comment, and then we'll go.
Yes, I talked to Nathan Twining Jr., the son of General Twining.
On Majestic 12.
And he said that the Haldeman film was correct and that there were other ETs at the base when the film was made. So there's more to the story. But also, I talked to a relative of Rod Serling, who was supposed to be the narrator when this was to be officially released. Also validated the fact that there were more involved in the so-called repression of that sterling event that was going to bring the American public into realization that we had cosmic friends visiting our air base. So the question we go back to again, and this is something, Grant, you raised again, is the psychological, and if I may say this more recently, the so-called metaphysical or the spiritual ramifications of what this means to the world at large. Should we go ahead with the whole new psychology or futurism? How do we handle the real McCoy?
But it sounds like they're doing a good job because they keep releasing and no one, and the stock market's gone up. So they must be
well,
doing
so recently, of course. But go ahead, Joe. Go ahead, Grant. Yeah.
Can I make a point? I forgot what my train of thought. Shoot. Okay, go ahead. I had a thought about what they were just talking about there.
It
escaped me.
Well, let's hear what Nikesh
said. Future shock has to be avoided at all costs, according to those who play the game at the top.
I just remember what it was. One of the things I think that's slowing the whole thing down is that people think the government knows everything. They've got it all figured out. But if you took a look at Eric Davis said they shut the program in 1989. They shut it down because they couldn't do anything. It's has got to do with consciousness. And if you see Tom DeLonge goes into the skiff, they say, he's going in, they say, yeah, come on down to the skiff. Like, come on. He's going to go into a Lockheed skiff, top secret skiff. And he says, he talks to the head scientist at Lockheed Skunk Works. And the guy says, how do you think it works? And Tom says, I think consciousness is involved. And he said he couldn't shut the guy up. So they know consciousness is involved. They know you fly the craft with your mind. They know this kind of stuff, but they don't have it. So you may have actually seen disclosure. This may be because this is the whole Trump thing. They give Trump the briefing. The Navy goes in, shows them the videos, and then Trump goes, yeah, whatever. You know, that's an interesting video, but I just still don't believe it. That may be all they really have in terms of telling people. Everybody thinks they've got, you know, they're flying the crafts and we're all over the place. It may be that you've seen disclosure. UFOs are real. Even if you go to Jacques Vallée, Hell Put Off, and Kit Green have the famous core story meeting in the 1980s. There's all this stuff going around the UFO community. So they sit down at the Denny's restaurant, famous story, and they say, there's all this garbage going around. What do we know for sure? The conclusion came to the core story. We are not alone. Something's interacting with us. We have hardware, and we aren't getting anywhere with it. And you see that in the Wilson document as well. In the Wilson document that was leaked from Edgar Mitchell's files, you see the same thing. They say, we have no technological ability to back engineer this stuff. It is so far beyond us. So that will stop them from coming out because they're playing the game against the Russians and Chinese and all sorts of other enemies that we're going to try to figure it out before them. So you don't want to let people know what you don't know.
Right. Well, let me
ask, military budgets being so large, military budgets would be embarrassed. Well, if you don't have the wherewithal to explain the details.
I just want to ask Nick, is there, if you've been inside the thinking, I think of those people who are in charge of some of those secrets, is there, I know you only talk from the British point of view perhaps, but is there a plan for disclosure? Everyone agrees the ball is being moved down the field. Would you say from your, let's say, professional opinion that there is a disclosure in place? Or movement towards that?
Well, I always say that I don't think disclosure is a single event. Mm-hmm. I think that some people have this rather cliched idea that there's going to be a sort of presidential announcement that will start my fellow Americans, people of the world, we're not alone, that the hangar doors are going to swing open and you're going to see this ship. And people will say, well, this is it. This is disclosure. And I don't think we're going to see that at all. I think Grant touched on it, and I think some of the others did too. Here's how I see it. And the clue, I think, is in the very different attitude that ATIP took as opposed to, say, Project Blue Book or the MOD's UFO program. Project Blue Book, if we rewind a little bit, came at the UFO phenomenon from the perspective of, let's investigate each and every sighting and see what we think they are. Now, ATIP, and this is my take on it, came at this from a 180 degree different perspective. They came at it from a sort of point of view of, let's take as our start point the reality of this phenomenon. And let's ask ourselves two questions. What are we dealing with in terms of what government would term the threats and the opportunities? And can we acquire any of this technology for ourselves? And if you look at the January 9th, 2018 letter that the Defense Intelligence Agency sent to Congress, just about two, 3 weeks after the Times broke the story, where people like John McCain and Jack Reed and their staffers were saying to DIA, what the heck's going on? You told us we didn't have a UFO program, and now I read that we did. It's clear when you look at the 38 studies that they produced under the ATIP contract that despite attempts to spin this as being about next generation aviation threats to the US, when you look at what they were actually looking at, anti-gravity, invisibility, warp drive, stargates, wormholes, and the Drake equation. The Drake equation, of course, you know, you could say with some of the other things, well, maybe it's about what Russia or China might have in 40 years. But the Drake equation, there was a paper on the Drake equation. Its only purpose is to calculate, to estimate how many communicable civilizations there might be in the galaxy. So ATIP, I think, came at it from this different perspective. And I don't know anything about consciousness. It's not my field. But I think right. Grant and some of the others are right. Maybe they hit a brick wall on this. And maybe the answer is, well, yeah, we think this is real, but at the moment, sorry, we just can't figure it out. And my father was Deputy Chief Scientific Advisor at the Ministry of Defense. And he was an aeronautical engineer by trade. And he always used to point out there is a world of difference between what the theoretical physicists say, which may very well be valid, but the kind of next question is, well, can we build that? Can we engineer it? And sadly, the answer might be, with a lot of this, at the moment, no, we can't.
Can I make one more point on this?
Yeah.
If you take a look, what do we really know? If you take a look at the debate that's going on between Eric Davis and Jack Sarfatti, and you have a Nobel Prize winner, it's in on this list or whatever, and these two guys are fighting about levitating a little piece of metal, like a layered piece of metal off the table. I mean, if they're fighting about the physics of levitating this piece of metal, do we really have anything? And these would be guys, if you're in a Nobel Prize, you're sort of in the field of physics. If something's going on, Sarfatti said that, if something was going on, I would know. And I'll give you the Canadian perspective. In the 1950s, Wilbur Smith was with the guy that ran the Flying Saucer program. He was a contactee. And what he stated was that when he presented the material to the government, they realized there was nothing they could do about it. And so they closed their eyes and hoped it would go away.
Well, Jan, I want to talk to you also about this because I think Grant mentioned before the whole Ben Rich, Lockheed Skunk work. Were you the guy that actually talked to Ben Rich?
And
you were. Can you tell us that? Because I don't want to put words in your mouth. What was it?
So I'm a graduate of the UCLA School of Engineering, where Ben had graduated many years before me. And he was retiring from the Lockheed Skunk Works. In fact, he had retired. And they had invited him to come speak to the alumni, the engineering alumni, which about 200 people showed up for this event. About his 40 years at the Lockheed Skunk Works. So it was supposed to be a very mundane talk. In fact, Stephen Justice has told me that he's the guy who put the pitch together, although he denies that they had any kind of technology that Ben alluded to, but hold that for a thought. So this was about 40 slides of the 40 years, starting with the U-2 spy plane, the SR-71, which made Ben Rich famous and allowed him to take over for Kelly Johnson, all the way up to the last slide. And it was pretty mundane stuff. It was just aircraft they had built, some of them that never saw the light of day. Very interesting talk. But his last one was a black disc zipping off. These were slides, a black disc zipping off into outer space. And he ended the talk by saying, we now have the technology to take ET home. He might have said something on the front end about an Air Force contract, but we now have the technology.
Well, you heard this yourself. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, well, so the interesting thing is I was sitting there with Tom Keller, who's a good friend of mine, and he writes for the MUFON Journal. And we were sitting there, and when he said that, the entire room burst out laughing. They thought he was joking. And he and I just looked at each other and said, did he really just say that? I mean, we couldn't believe he'd actually said that. So after the polite Q, I call it the polite Q&A ended, and people were dispersing, about 20 people huddled around Ben, and we spent some more time talking to him. And during that discussion, I won't take you through, I'll shorten it up here, but basically...
It's interesting. No, it's fascinating. I think this is the most fascinating part of some of this research, your personal experience. So you give us a bit of the story. Yeah.
Well, let me just go back to his talk. In his talk, he had a couple of different parts that I found very, very interesting. One was he thought that the... heavy burden of security in the intelligence community. I mean, he talked about they'd have guys in suits with sunglasses on standing in the room where they were building the craft, like the F-117, which we know now exists. And he said it was just oppressive. He says, with the fall of the Berlin Wall, this stuff should be out to the free world. He was really pushing for whatever technology they had in the black to be now brought out in the light. I saw that in his demeanor. He also said another thing, which I found very fascinating, and this is 1993. He said, there are no secrets in the world. There are no secrets in the world. And he didn't explain himself. And I thought to myself many years later, like 8 years later, when 9/11 happened, well, if there are no secrets in the world, how'd that happen? You know, how does that happen without people knowing about it? So, and I've been told by other people, there's reasons for that, but that's neither here nor there. But so I'm talking to him afterwards, and he's talking to the group, and he says, you know, we figured out how to work stealth because we took a Russian mathematician's equations